The Bible is the most fascinating book I ever picked up in my life. And it's so amazing that that as a young man, when I was in school and I was being taught and I was learning how to read and write and I was learning how to do all the things that you're supposed to learn in school as you grow up in high school, and that I didn't recognize it for what it was. I know why. I just wasn't that interested in doing what God wanted. I went to church because I was made to go. And I just didn't enjoy it. I had one thing on my mind when I got there. When is this going to be over? And I just didn't enjoy it. So I told you that for this reason. If it wasn't for God, I never would have gotten interested in it. And I know that now. So when I look at the things I know and the things I've learned, and people say kind things to me and they compliment me and they do this and they do that, I'm sorry, I just can't accept it, because I wouldn't be here if God hadn't got me interested in this. And I know that now. So I'm very thankful to God for that, because, man, he gave me this. He gave me the interest in all this. And I already had my future set out. I loved what I was doing. I loved intelligence work, and I loved meteorology. So God just gave me this desire, and all of a sudden, all the other things I'd learned in life, he began to teach me from what I already knew into what he wanted me to learn. So I owe God a lot, and I can't thank him enough. Please allow me to continue discussing this acceleration of groaning by a crust that has been producing great groaning sounds for a very long time, as its plates slid by one another to produce earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and tsunami. One place over in Finland, they thought that that the actual screaming, there was screaming coming in Finland out of the plates where they could, there was a big crevice in the earth, and they could see down in there, and it sounded like a woman screaming. And every once in a while they'd slide, and it sounds just like a woman screaming, like she was in hell. So they believe that this thing went all the way down to hell. And there's lots of things that God did, and I'm glad that I'm able to understand them now. It did help me in the lectures a lot, too. It did booster my confidence. And my faith was pretty weak, so I think God did that so I would be delighted in it. But in any case, here I am. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain until now. It's been doing that ever since Genesis 1 and 2. And it's going to continue to do that. After Adam fell, it's been groaning quite a bit. The word translated creation is katis. It looks like Isis. Katis. Which means all that which was created. And in this context, refers to all that God created, including the earth, all that is on it, and all that is in it. The last massive groaning and travailing and pain by earth occurred when man had reached such a state of utter degradation in ungodly immorality that God deemed it necessary to bring judgment on the human race. That's one of the things I've learned. God's the judge of everything. And when I get to start to judging other people or start to be not going to him for knowledge and for wisdom, when I start judging things myself, I do a lousy job. And so God is anxious to give us wisdom. He's anxious to give us understanding. And he's anxious to build up our virtue and our knowledge. And he wants us to know how to worship him correctly. And he did it by using his creation, his earth, to bring it to pass. There's no way I can say how impressed I am with God. There's no word I can find in the English language. I don't even know a word that would describe him, except love. It took me a long time to learn that. But God is love. And the thing that has impressed me most about God is how he can love somebody like me, like us, and yet he does. God used his earth to destroy man who dwelt on it. He destroyed man with the earth. I told you the story how I was introduced to this next scripture. The old boy's dead now. He used to send his stuff to me that he wrote. He was a terrible writer, and I didn't know how to. I didn't want to hurt his feelings, so I kept encouraging him. And he died with cancer. But I owe him this. I think God had him pointed out to me. And God saw the wickedness of man that was great in the earth, that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. I mean, God had just had it up to here. If God had a neck, he had it up to here. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. And Noah found grace in the eyes of God. And Noah was still offering sacrifices the way he was supposed to. They had done it in his line all the way from Seth. That was the only line that was still offering the sacrifices correctly. All the rest had stopped worshiping God. They'd stopped offering the sacrifices the way they should. They had all kind of flaws in the way they worshiped. But Noah was still offering them. And I would say it was because he loved God. I would also say it was because he feared God. Because if you love God, you get to know God. And after you get to know God, you know there's a limit. And you know he won't send you to hell, but you know there's a limit. And I've come up to that limit a few times, and I've quickly turned around and learned more and more about how I better obey him. I love him, not as much as I should, but I fear him, because I know that what he does is right. And when I do something wrong, he lets me know it. My comments on this verse, which I placed in the key of the bottomless pit more than 25 years ago, and the one which follows it, are quoted from an excerpt from the book which follows. Begin quote from the book. We are told repeatedly in the New Testament, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. Please regard the magnitude of the first tribulation, in which only 8 people survived, the rest being destroyed by water. Think about that. I've seen some estimates as to what the approximate population of the earth was at that time, and there's so many different things. But there were a lot of people here by that time, and they were destroyed by water. Think about that. I mean, just think about it. 8 people. And you remember Job? You remember how it was apparently his children were destroyed while they were having a birthday party, and that seems to be the case. I mean, they were destroyed, and it was a birthday party. But before that, Job had been concerned about his children, and he had offered sacrifices for them. And God honored that. So those children, they're in heaven today. And Job was doubly rewarded at the end of his life after he went through all that. Job asked for a daysman, and that daysman was Jesus Christ. He came as the daysman, and he's our counselor between God and God. And, you know, please observe in verse 13 that God, not man, did the destroying. He said, I will destroy. And please note, it was not done with man's help or technology. It was done with the earth. Man never had a thing in the world to do with creating the earth. God used his own natural creation to destroy sinful mankind with water. How did God bring it to pass? The answer is found in Genesis 7, 11, 12. This was one of the happiest times of my life when I was discovering this. And I wasn't fudging. I had done forecast studies and I had fudged on them. And so they'd look better. But I was amazed. I shouldn't have been, but I was amazed. I didn't have to fudge anything. When I looked all these words up, I thought, good grief. And I don't have to fudge anything. I don't have to shift it to my side. There it is. In the 700th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th of the day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up. And when it talks about broken up, that's interesting. And the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Okay, I didn't ever do any research on 40 days and 40 nights. I just take it 40 days and 40 nights. That's how long it was. How long were the days then? Well, I assume 24 hours. You say, well, they might have been 24.5. Well, I don't know, but I just take them as days. I never even bothered to look those words up. They're at 40 days and 40 nights. Most biblical references of today positively identify the great deep of verse 11 as the crustal surface of the earth that underlies the seas and oceans of the world. May I remind you that God created the crust of the earth long ago and is able to manipulate it as he pleases. Virtually all references identify windows of heaven as the atmosphere of the earth, which was a previous creation of God. So God took two things he has already created and manipulated them to bring forth water from above and below to destroy sinful mankind. When I began to look what this broken up meant, and it meant just exactly what it said. And out of the broken places along the boundaries, there came up fountains. And I told them, I told Dr. Cahoon and I told Dr. Veer over at Arkansas Tech, I said, there's water down. I said, there's springs down there. Well, they were nice to me. They didn't want to hurt my feelings, but they said, we don't know. There are not any fountains down there along those tectonic plates. Well, they hadn't discovered them. Nobody had. And then after I was at Tech, and while I was at Tech and before I graduated, they sent deep sea diving bells down for the first time along those cracks. Went all the way down the deepest part. There's fountains all over the place. And so I told Dr. Veer, I said, Dr. Veer, look, there it is. And I gave him the report. He said, well, Tom, he called me Mac. He said, hey, Mac, he said, that's just in that isolated place and it's a special case. They started sending down deep sea diving bells and they're all over the earth. And then they discovered that there was meteoric water that was at one time down there. Meteoric water is water that was stored down there underneath the crust. And when these plates broke open, that meteoric water, it means meteors in a long time in the past had been putting it down. Guess who controls meteors? Guess who controls asteroids? Guess who controls all of this? God. And so by that time, I had gotten to the point where I said, I had a lot of confidence. I said, and God had built me up with what I had learned. And I just told him, I said, they're down there. And lo and behold, pretty soon they just blushed a little, but they were down there. Now they're all over the crust of the earth and they're still operating. And they do turn the water blood red at times, depending on the organic content of the iron that's in them when they come up. So all these things that I was talking to them about, they began to be more friendly to me. And we began to have discussions on some of this stuff. And Dr. Cahoon listened, and so did Dr. Veer. But Dr. Veer's father was an atheist. And Dr. Veer knew that if he accepted Christ, I'm not going to tell you, it would have been hard on him. Now, that's just an opinion that I have. It's not the fact. But Dr. Cahoon, he came around, and he Dr. Cahoon is a Christian. So I'm thankful for that. They were both fine men. I love them both very much. They're retired now. In the approaching Great Tribulation period, God will once again manipulate the crust and its atmosphere to bring forth not water, but rather fire from below and from above. During the pages that follow, I will show that God intends to shake the earth to its geological foundations by his great power. And the results of that shaking will be the fulfillment of most of the destructive prophecies uttered by the Revelator John and the Old Testament prophets concerning the last years of this age. And those came directly from God to the writer. And the writer wrote them led by God's Spirit. And what they say, you can be sure, is the absolute truth. And what I needed was something to booster my faith, because that strengthened me. Man, I was a pretty proud, haughty, arrogant meteorologist. And by the time God got through with me and showing me all this, I had great confidence in God's word. And so I needed this. And when I went out on those lecture tours, I had answers for all the critics. And when they would criticize what I was saying, and we had debates at some of the places we did at Texas A&M University, in Withers Tower, I believe. I don't remember the name of some of these towers. But we exchanged. And I was able to defend what I presented to them. One of the guys out of one of those places, it was Texas A&M University, he was a doctor, and he was getting ready to retire. And he came. He was a believer. And when he finished, when he retired, he called and asked me if he could have my stuff. I sent it to him. And last count I had of him, he was going through the Rockies and teaching people in colleges and universities up there. I'm trying to think of his name, but I can't anymore. But anyway, it had its purpose and it had its use. And I didn't realize a lot of things that were happening to me. But God knew exactly what he was doing. And so as time passed, I began to just openly. I talked to Dr. Gish, who was one of those that believe that the Earth is a young planet, he's saved, and he's a Baptist, but he's a nice guy, and so was, and I talked with him. He's written several books. And he asked me to send him a set of the tapes I made, and I sent them. And we're good friends. But there are a lot of things that God had me in contact with people that I disagreed with, but at least we had lengthy discussions, and I could defend what the Bible said. Not that it needed defense, but you see, most people don't understand that the Bible is inspired. They don't understand that it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. They don't understand that. And so it was beneficial to me to be able to explain to them exactly why I believed it. But I never once indicated in any way that the Bible was flawed. And when they'd ask me about uniforms, I'd say, well, if you had been in England and you had never seen a one-horned goat, and that was it wasn't uncommon in the Holy Land, I said, that could be a one-horned goat. And I also explained to them that a hippopotamus. I said, there are lots of things, but I said, God's not wrong. I said, the original language had it exactly as it's supposed to be, and God is not responsible for men who are ministers of a false faith misinterpreting it. And if you're not willing to study the Bible, then how much can God teach you? And so we're willing to study the Bible, and we're willing to admit when we're wrong. And that's the hardest thing a man ever has to face in life. It cuts his pride, cuts his legs out from underneath him. He says, and there were voices and thunders and thirdings. There was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. For we know that the whole creation, katis, groaneth and travaileth in vain now, for the earnest expectation of the creature, the Chris, waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God. You know, the sons of God are going to appear on this earth. They're going to be manifested. And I think that they already are in a lot of ways. And I think in our everyday life, we manifest God. And I think that the law is fulfilled by Jesus being in us. And his doing that work and manifesting himself is a manifestation of the sons of God. And the whole creation is made by God. I tell you, I don't think the millennial reign is going to have any earthquakes of any consequence. May have a ripple here and there. What causes earthquakes? God. Well, how does he? Well, in the beginning, I don't think we had a whole lot of earthquakes after Adam and Eve were first created. But over a period of time after the sin that started a long time before, actually, I think that a lot of pressure built up. It's still building up. It's been building up ever since Genesis. And the plates keep sliding forth by one another, and it just gets more and more pressure built up around all the borders and boundaries. What's going to happen on the last great earthquake? It's going to release all the pressure. There will never have been an earthquake like it since God placed man on the earth. Before that, maybe so, but what's it going to do? It's going to relieve all the pressure. The whole plate structure, this is going to be a horrible thing, but we'll be up in heaven, and God will be protecting the remnant down there during the wrath of God. That's when it's going to occur, the last biggie. And what will happen is all that tension and pressure will be relieved. All that liquid rock pushing up and down, and God controls that. So finally, when it starts cooling and settling, you won't have all that pressure. It will settle in a natural way, God's way. And I doubt if we have much more than just a quiver until the last part of the millennial reign. And then all that stuff that froze up back then is probably going to bust loose all at once. And you're going to have a whole new heaven and a whole new earth created. And so I'm looking forward to the millennial reign because I'm not worried about earthquakes killing people. And I'm certainly not worried about dying in the millennial reign. But everything God does is so perfectly structured that as I saw these things happening, I said, man, you don't know zip. I just said, man, you think you know so much and you don't know anything. And I just realized I'm lucky, not lucky. I'm very fortunate and I'm very thankful that God in his infinite mercy and grace chose me to do what I did. But I didn't do it, he did it. See, I didn't know that. I thought I was helping God do some things, and I felt really good about it until I found out. And I was ashamed when I found out. I didn't run around telling people, but I gradually found out, and I said, man, I'm sorry, Lord. You know, I still apologize to him for getting those things that are behind. I tell you to do that all the time. Sometimes I wish I could. Well, the same Greek word, Christos, is used for creation and creature. In context, it refers to the things God created except man, it in this particular context. And it is mankind that the rest of the creation is waiting to see manifested in glorified form. Children of God in glorified bodies when Christ brings them back to earth at his second advent. The greatest massive groaning and travailing of the earth, and we'll be seeing each other. There won't be any problem with that. The greatest massive groaning and travailing of the earth will occur during the last 1,260 days of the tribulation period, which will be ended by the return of the saved to the earth at the second advent of Jesus. The massive local groaning and travailing of the earth's crust that produced the tsunami in the East Indies is a forerunner of what we can expect on a worldwide basis during the Great Tribulation period. We have not yet entered into the tribulation period, but I do believe our entrance is just around the corner, not in the distant future. The most important thing for a child of God is not to know when it will occur, the exact time, but to be ready for its sudden arrival. A child of God would want to have great rewards of Christ at his second advent. One surely needs to be one of the Lord's churches and to be a member who is watching for Christ's coming in his lifestyle and work for Christ, as Christ indicates in his warning to the church at Sardis. I use that church at Sardis a lot, because that church at Sardis is something that really every church ought to pay very close attention to. Men and women are not saved by their baptism, church membership, or works, but such things determine what you wear on the glorified body and where you live relative to where the Lord positions himself in the millennium on this earth and in the final kingdom on the new earth. I am saved eternally by grace through faith, but make no mistake, as one who is assured of living in heaven, I would be a spiritual fool if I did not follow my master's example. He walked some 50 miles to be baptized by the proper authority and by the head and foundation of the first church, and as the head and foundation of the first church was faithful to death. Works by saved men and women determine what they wear and where they live after they have already arrived in heaven. You will not lose your inner garment, but you can lose your robe and your crown if you sow to the flesh rather than to the Spirit who indwells you and tries to lead your saved soul in good works. Ephesians 4:30. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. You've got to reconcile that with Galatians 6:7, also a church. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And I'm letting you go 5 minutes early. You want to dismiss us, Ken?